Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022. Today, portfolio risk. Now, there will be a quiz at 12:30, and so you'll suffer this just for a while. Primarily, I am going to do some Excel, show you actually how you can get the risk metrics and the expected return to a stock or to a portfolio here during the time we have before the quiz. And start off with the numbers here. It is a bear day. It's a grouchy day. And interestingly, the Dow is down more than the S&P 500. The Dow is down almost more than the NASDAQ is. So the impact, whatever negative impact is occurring, seems to be focusing on the large cap stocks more than the smaller cap stocks. Dow is getting kind of smacked pretty hard right now. But as you can see, as I had told you, crude oil is coming back up. We're back up near, it was a 111 about an hour ago. It's going to keep climbing now. And that, you'll see a few drops, but for the most part, it's aiming for 125 a barrel. It's going to try to get there. Whether or not it does in the short run, I'm not sure. But a lot of the correction, a lot of the adjustment with the lower supply that will be in the global markets because of cutting off Russia has already come through. From here, the question will be, how will oil-producing nations react? Will they increase their supplies, their production, to compensate, or are they going to hold them down so that they can realize these higher prices? A lot of it has to do with the price elasticity of demand and all of that, but the oil-producing and exporting countries aren't stupid. They're not going to just crank up production and drive oil prices down if they can make some money off the higher levels. On the other hand, they do tend to try to be helpful to the world economy, and it's certainly not going to help us if we have oil prices so high that it cripples us into a recession. Going over here, gold and silver, there's nothing really much to talk about there. They flop around trying to find some ground, but there's not really much there. So we have investors that are getting out of equities, and we have the bond market. The yields are going up. That's a strong 13 basis point rise in the yield, which means that's a drop in the price. So investors are getting out of bonds. They're not really playing with metals, and they're getting out of stocks, so you would have to assume that they're moving money into cash. In other words, they're putting it in a safe place just to see what in the world happens next. London had a surge at the beginning, and then it just kind of flopped around from there. So that 0.5% rise in the FTSE 100 was all because of excitement at the beginning of the day. After that, nothing. And then you got the Nikkei, which was flopping around, and then in the late trading, towards the end of the day, there was a good surge, so they finally ended up maybe up about 0.2%, but nothing spectacular. Right now, the world is in a sort of a holding pattern. It's not going to be good for a while, but at the same time, is it going to be that bad? And the answer to that is still waiting. Mostly right now, we're kind of in a let's see what happens in Ukraine. If the conflict continues to be contained to that country, most of the information that would have for stock prices has already come through. If, however, the war expands or if the situation changes dramatically, then you'll see stocks begin to react to that as well. There may be a dramatic change over the next week to 2 weeks in the situation in Eastern Europe. It could get to the point where there is clearly the stall of the Russian troops will be met with an overwhelming attack by the Ukrainians driving them back. That might trigger a nuclear shot from Russia, which, or we might get involved, NATO might get involved because of something else. We'll see. Right now, it's quiet, and that's just fine for the time being. We'll just hold on to that and keep that going. Let's look over here real quick at the yield curve. Oh, boy. Yeah, the yield curve on the 15th, it was inverted on the 7-10-year leg, 1 basis point, got to 3, and then it got to 2, and now we're back to 3 as of last night. So there you are. That inverted yield curve was not a fluke. There's no question about that. And that's a forewarning. We've got a recession coming. 6 to 9 months, maybe we can hold it off a little longer than that, but we definitely have all the numbers that are pointing to a recession coming up. So you prepare yourselves accordingly for that possibility. Now, let me talk about something here. I showed you the capital asset pricing model, and I talked about how important the beta is to our way of assessing risk. The expected return to a stock in a well-diversified portfolio is going to be the risk-free rate plus the beta of the stock or the portfolio times the expected return to the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate. And we, of course, call that little thing in there the market premium over risk-free. Really a simple equation. I mean, I give you one of these on the exam. It's just like almost a gimme. It's just some quick, dirty arithmetic. Nothing to panic about at all. Okay. So, the beta. Actually, I mean, if I were to talk a lot about how the beta is derived theoretically, that's an FIL 242 kind of thing. Take a day, spin everyone's heads a little bit with all of the summation signs and all of that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, interestingly enough, the beta itself is the calculation of a beta. You can do that, and I'm even going to do one. Now, the calculation that I would do would not be give you the beta that you would see in like Yahoo or something like that, because I would be using historical data, and you're supposed to use expected data. And you have to really use like monthly data, and all I'm going to use is yearly data. But actually, the beta of a stock is the correlation coefficient between that stock and the market portfolio, in other words, that world portfolio, times the standard deviation of the stock over the standard deviation of the market portfolio's returns. That's all it is. I mean, it's actually not a hard calculation. Excel makes it like a joke. But that correlation coefficient, now, I don't know if they did it in statistics for you or not. I'm sure they showed you a correlation coefficient, but the issue is, did they show you there are actually several correlation coefficients by using different formulas? There's a Pearson correlation coefficient, there's a Spearman, and there are a couple of others even. This is the classic, if you type into Excel, equals C-O-R-R-E-L, open parentheses, that's the one we're talking about here. It's not hard to get. An important feature of any portfolio is your correlation coefficient. You want to make your own portfolio. I don't want to buy an ETF. I don't want to buy a mutual fund. I want to build a portfolio of my own. Well, the one thing that is important in portfolio diversification is getting stocks that aren't well correlated with each other. You see, if two stocks are correlated, they're not going to cancel each other's company risk. You want them to be less correlated. Just like the more people I put into an insurance pool, the better, because the more likely the illnesses of each person are not going to be correlated with each other very well. Put another way, I've heard people say, well, I like to, my portfolio is all healthcare stocks. Or my portfolio is all like industrial stocks. Well, that's stupid because those are highly correlated stocks. You're not going to get rid of any of that diversifiable risk. So how would you find that? Well, here's a nice site called Portfolio Visualizer, and they've got a correlation thing here going on. Let me explain. I'm going to put in some stocks here and see if they would be good together in a portfolio. Like, for example, Ford, Kellogg, Netflix, I don't know, Microsoft, Walmart, what else could I put in there? I don't know, General Electric, let's do Facebook. Let's put Facebook in there. Now, I'll use their 36-month returns. In other words, they'll calculate the correlation coefficient using a 36-month set of returns for each of them and get just like an Excel equals correlation and have a look. Oops, I screwed up something here. That's a comma. Try that again. Here we go. Now, you're going to have different investment people tell you different numbers. I don't care. I'm worried if I see above a 0.3. If the correlation coefficient is below 0.3, I'm pretty happy. Well, obviously, Ford with itself is 1. But Ford with Kellogg, that's a low correlation. They'd be okay in a portfolio together because they're canceling out a lot of each other's peculiar risk, company risk. Netflix and Ford, and you can see, well, that's kind of obvious. They wouldn't be too correlated. And Walmart, good grief. Those two, Ford and Walmart, would be great because they'd really cancel out a lot of each other's. Now, with GE, that's interesting. A lot of times I got nothing. When they're highly correlated, I ask myself, well, why? Sometimes it makes all the sense. Sure, obviously. But GE and Ford are pretty darn correlated. I guess in a way they're both industrial companies in a way, so maybe that's it. And obviously Ford and Facebook aren't going to be too correlated. But if we look across here, Kellogg actually looks like it'd be good in any portfolio. It's like one of those stocks that isn't correlated with much of anything. It's like a food cereal company. Netflix, oh, look at that. It's actually got a slight negative correlation with Walmart. That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that. With Facebook, I guess, you know, they're both kind of like online things. So that tells me, yeah, maybe not together in a portfolio. Microsoft, it's really kind of pushy its luck there with Netflix. I don't know. But if we go down here, Walmart, yeah, GE with Ford, and Meta, yeah, with Netflix. Actually, I didn't mean to do that. I was actually hoping to find some that were highly correlated. But you can see that most of those are pretty well pretty low correlation with each other. The one that seems to be the most troublemaker, I don't know, Facebook maybe. But other than that, I mean, this is actually would be a good foundation for a portfolio here. It's just these five, six or seven stocks together would be a decent portfolio. I might leave Facebook out of it for other reasons anyway, or I might be a little bit skittish about Netflix, although that's kind of odd, though. Netflix and Walmart, what? If you're Netflixing and chilling, you're not going to Walmart? I don't, you know, a lot of times it's kind of hard to call. But this is, if you want to build your own portfolio, at least, and even if you're not going to do 30 stocks, at least have a look at this cheapo portfolio visualizer and say, are these correlated with each other? And if they're not too correlated, well, whatever you get, you got some, at least a little bit of elimination of diversifiable risk with these. Now, let me take you on a little bit of a journey here. I've shown you this site before, and this is a great site if you want to do some quick, dirty statistical analysis to put in a paper that you're doing or something like that. Because, I mean, they have got literally thousands and thousands of indexes, ETFs, and individual stocks, the historical data going back to 1975. And I mean, there's sites you can go to and get more data than that, but you just kind of, it kind of can't beat this for the variety. You can get indexes. You can get, even if you want to look at other countries, you can go here and you'll get the historical returns for countries all over the world for their exchanges, if you were doing some kind of international analysis. So, it's worth it to have this sort of like a, one of your bookmarks somewhere in the background, just so you can grab some of these. What I'm going to do here, I keep saying the market portfolio, the world market portfolio. Well, that would actually be really a pain in the butt to get every stock in the world, create a synthetic portfolio, and look at its returns from week to week or month to month or year to year. That would be like hundreds of millions of stocks. The truth of the matter is that the Standard & Poor's 500, those 500 companies, they constitute maybe about two-thirds of the market cap of the world. Just those 500 companies do. So if you were looking for something that was the market portfolio, but you didn't want to do something crazy like try to build the entire world portfolio, the Standard & Poor's 500 is kind of like a go-to for the market portfolio. I mean, it's not the whole thing, but it's a lot of it. So sometimes we will, instead of trying to find the market portfolio's returns, the standard deviation, the average, median, coefficient of variation, Sharpe ratio, all that, we'll just grab the S&P 500 and use that one instead. So that's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to open up an Excel sheet. Now, I used to do something stupid. I used to use Excel to go and get the data. But I found out that it's in the latest versions of Excel, it's actually a lot like work. But if you were mad enough to do that, I'll show you really quickly, and then I'll get away from it before I begin to tire myself out with it. I'm going to copy that address of the Standard & Poor's 500. Control C. Well, yeah, I'm going to get the address. And if you've ever done this, it's called data harvesting. And it's actually something that you'll probably need to know how to do at some point in your life, I suppose. Get data from a from the web, yeah. And it's going to say, okay. And we're going to crash with this. Oh, they'll say, where is this data at? And you give it the web address, the URL, and you say, okie dokie. And say, connect to it. And this is just, I'm going to get rid of this really fast. And it's going to say, okay, what exactly? See, the problem is that they used to show you the different tables. You got to watch it because the menu bar in almost all websites is a table, and you don't want that one. Is this the one I want? Yes. Well, I'll be darned, I found it. Like I said, they used to show you pictures of each data, each table, and you say, oh, that's the one I want, more of that. Okay, you say, load. And it'll give you the data set. This is called data harvesting, and it's something we do all the time to grab data sets for. And matter of fact, we write macros. As soon as I open the sheet, go get that latest data there kind of thing. So that gives you an idea of what you can do. Now, I'm going to get rid of that as fast as I can. I don't want to do that. I'm going to do it the cheap, dirty way. Yes, delete that table. And I'm just going to go over here and say I'm going to copy the data. Control-C. And then go over here. I'm going to Control-V the data. Like that. And you got your table. And if you ever want to do this kind of statistical analysis, this is a quick, dirty way to do it. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get rid of all of these. All I care about are the returns. Delete. Okay, so there's my data there. Okay, and so this would give me a sense of the world market portfolio. And I can do all the fancy things like, for example, I can do the average, the mean, well, let me put use a fancy word for it, the mean of the data, the standard deviation. I want to say something here. I think I said it before, but I want to emphasize it. And then the, well, actually, no, I want to put the median in too, and the standard deviation, and the coefficient of variation. And here, I'm going to do something else down here in just a minute. But the first thing that I'll do is, okay, equals average of B2 through B48. Equals the standard deviation. Now, here's something I need to point out. STDEV. It's going to offer you a whole bunch of standard deviations. Now, the one that you want is the one where you don't put anything in there. That's a sample standard deviation. In other words, it divides the data, the whole, add them up, squares, probability, all that, and it divides it by n minus 1, the number of data points minus 1. That's the one you use for a sample. We don't have the population of data. We have a sample. So the one at the top is the sample. Don't try to pick one of the other ones. And then you say B2 through B48. And then the standard, whoops, I median, God. I apologize, B2 through B48. Whoops, equals, try it again. And then equals the standard deviation of B2 through B48. And that should be a percentage, but it's not going to know that. So you'll have to correct that. And then this one is equal to the coefficient of variation is equal to the standard deviation divided by the average. Now that's a pure number. I'm going to format this one real quick here for you. Format the cells. That's a percentage, two decimal places. So it's in the same units. And this one's a pure number, but I'm going to calm it down a little bit. Say, give me just two decimal places. Okay. No big thing. Now I want to say, okay, suppose I want to find a beta of a company using that formula right there. I can do it. I'm going to go back to onestock1.com, and I'm going to come back here, and I'm going to find a stock. I don't know. Ford? Does Ford have Nope. I want to go Ford. Ford, page 2. Ford. Whoa. Okay. Well, Ford. We'll just do Ford just for the fun of it, just for the heck of it. Boy, they had a heck of a return. Look at that return last year. Control-C, and I'm going to put that in there. And then get rid of everything but the returns. Delete. Okay. Okay, so now we'll go down here and let's copy this data over and see what we... There we go. So now, the next thing I want to do, I'm going to need a correlation coefficient. Oops. Equals. No, I don't. Correlation. Okay, so now I'm going to say equals the correlation, C-O-R-R-E-L, of this data vector, what they call an array in Excel, comma, the Ford data vector. Let's see how closely Ford is correlated. Ford's returns over the past 47 years or so are correlated with the correlation coefficient is about 0.41. So in other words, Ford moves about 40%. The best way to say it is about 40% of Ford's movements are with the market. Okay, now I can figure out the beta. The beta of those, I would say, is going to be equal to the correlation coefficient between Ford and the market portfolio, which we're proxying with Standard & Poor's 500, times the standard deviation of Ford, this number, divided by the standard deviation of the market portfolio, proxied by S&P 500. And this should be, now this isn't going to be a good beta because it's using yearly data instead of monthly or weekly data, and it's also historical data, but it's a shot. Wow. Holy Jehoshaphat. Look at that son of a dog. That's a high beta. Now, Ford's is obviously not that high, of course. But that's how we do it, except, like I said, we would be using monthly data. And I will tell you right now, you see this last data point for Ford? That one is, I would almost say that's an outlier. Get rid of it. I'd be tempted to just dump that one real fast. In fact, that's what I'm going to do here. Let's do the mean, but I'm going to shave off 1 year. God! No, wait, whoa. Okay, 330. You know what? I want you to think about it. Okay, if your income goes down by 336.68%, what does that mean has happened to you? Not only did you die, you went to about what, the third level of hell? You say, how can you go down more than 100%? Well, I'd shoot the hell out of that one. Okay. I got nothing on that. But here's something we do actually do, and I'd probably throw that one out too. If I see real outliers, I just get those out of the data stream because it's causing trouble. Okay, that's all I have for you. I thank you.